Listen to Mariam and Babak greeting each other and inquiring about each other's health.
Mariam John, salam.
Bah, Babak John, salam. صبح بخیر. چطوری؟
مرسی، قربانت. بد نیستم. تو چطوری؟ خوبی؟
خیلی خوبم، مرسی.
Mariam then introduces a new friend, Yasaman, to Babak. Note the use of plural verb endings to show respect and formality.
مریم جان تنها هستی؟
نه بابک، با دوستم هستم. با دوستم، یاسمن. یاسمن، این بابک است. بابک نقاش است. سلام.
We're talking about the resonance, the empire in the modern world. And it hasn't been forgotten in Iran. It's never been forgotten in Iran. But its true significance has been forgotten in the West. We have forgotten that, actually, there are deeper roots to Roman and Greek and Western civilization.
به به، چه خوب. مریم، امشب منزل هستی؟
بله، من و یاسمین امشب منزل هستیم.
به 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 به. Good morning, you're listening to Six Pillars to Persia on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm your host, Farrie Bradley, and today I'm joined by Austrian-Iranian filmmaker Minu Nowruzi. Good morning, Minu.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good afternoon, rather.
Oh, well, I know, it's always morning for me, that's the thing, until it starts getting dark.
Do you lose your phone when you think it's morning?
I know, this is terrible. You've been a victim of London pickpocketing. How did it happen? Tell us.
I have no idea. One second I had it, the next second I didn't.
This is when it would pay off to have a really paranoid uncle who was in the armed forces, who always taught you vigilance from a young age, isn't it?
But I am super vigilant and I never lose anything.
That's gone from your pocket.
Yeah, I check about 5 times.
Like, yeah?
Yeah.
This is the thing. What do you do?
You have a box of old telephones at home and you order a new SIM card for £10 and in 5 days' time you're back on track.
So it's not too damaging?
No.
No. At the moment, you're working towards an exhibition, aren't you, that's opening on the 19th?
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Group show. It's a sort of consortium. I don't really know much about them, but they're called the London Group. And they're holding a biennial exhibition, which is sort of open to artists from any media to by open submission. And it's at the Chocolate Factory, just around the corner from here, actually.
Great. When does it open?
On Tuesday, next Tuesday, I think that's the 20th, actually.
So it's a multimedia exhibition. Is it based around a theme?
Actually, I get the impression that it's mostly painting, and there is 2 installation works, of which one is mine.
Mm. So how do you feel people react to film when they go to an art gallery? Because often, you know, you go there, you expect fine art, sculpture. And with film, it takes on a different dimension. Have you ever watched people looking at your work kind of incognito? How does it strike you with film?
It varies. I think, you know, I'm myself not a great fan of video works in galleries on a monitor with a set of headphones. I resisted a long time to have my work shown in galleries, but there's people working now with, you know, the space being a more immersive experience, and it has sort of moved towards a more cinematic experience because people aren't just like putting a monitor in the corner of a gallery with a set of headphones. It's about engaging people in a cinematic way rather than just like. But still, there's a lot of, it's kind of popular, and there's a lot of galleries that think, yeah, we'll just put a plinth in the corner with a shitty old TV and some headphones, and that will be our video art section.
I know what you mean. It's very standard.
Yeah.
What would you have instead then?
Ideally, I don't know. Recently, I've been really impressed by an artist called Hiraki Sawa, who did an installation at the Chisenhall Gallery. I forget what the name of the installation was. It's over now, but I mean, I can't really describe it any other way than that the use of space is immersive. So you walk in and it's not just about engaging with a screen. It's about engaging with a space and what happens in that space in terms of the audiovisual experience.
So is it with speakers, loudspeakers and several screens? Or?
Yeah, this one was a massive Chisenhall project space. Is very big space, and he had maybe, I don't know, 2, 4, 6, maybe 8 screens, which were placed on the floor. They were each about maybe 2.5 by 1.5 meters. And so there was like a story, if you wish to interpret a story into it, that you could have done that. So you're doing sort of your own editing as you're looking at 8 screens at the same time, which are placed in the room.
Sounds great. Well, I've seen your films, a few of them, then they fall into 2 main categories as art, film and documentary.
Yeah.
You studied cinematography and documentary production, didn't you, at University of the Arts?
Yeah. I don't make a distinction between the two, though, but
you
anyway.
Don't. All right, that's interesting. There was one where I was really struck by the stillness in the film. Really nothing was happening visually to the main protagonist and everyone else was moving around them. So you'd persuaded somebody to stand still, it looked like, for a long time. And the audio was just one of their comments with the incidental sound.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. What made you pull and push like that with the stillness and the tension?
That piece is called Imago and is actually the one that's being shown at Southwark Street on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I had this idea or that if I asked you what your favourite line from a movie was, that and you told me and I could see you in your workspace, that I could get a good sense of who you are, maybe, or what your latent desire is.
That's a divination.
Yeah, it was kind of an experiment. So I put an ad out on a casting call, really, because I thought, okay, who's going to be most... I mean, I could have done this within... Oops, the chair is creaking. I could have done this in any type of... profession. But I was living in Los Angeles at the time and I figured that the acting profession would have been a good community for me to test this out on, because one, they would be mad about movies, and two, they would probably be very forthcoming with me asking them to do anything. So I put a casting call out asking, what's your favourite line from a movie and what's where do you work? What's your day job? And so I, you know, like a stamp collection, I went out and I collected these... vignettes, you know, like tableaus. And I approached it like a documentary filmmaker in the sense that I didn't stage any of it, although some of it looks very constructed. I asked them to carry on doing what they were doing and that I would tell them to freeze at one point and that they would have to do that for 2 minutes without blinking. And, you know, being actors, they were very obliging.
It was great. And there was one where she was standing in front of a candy pink house on a corner and school children were going past. It just reminded me of, I don't know if you've seen Kurosami's 5.
No, I haven't.
It's when ducks are passing and the shot is...
Oh, yes, I have. Yeah, I saw that.
And he confesses that he spent most of the filming process chasing the ducks backwards and forwards.
Ah.
But you couldn't tell with yours whether the school children had been ushered.
No. Kurosami does fiction, right?
I guess so. I mean, he did one which was frogs, you know, doing their little, what do you call it, ribbiting at their pond at night, and it was just filming the pond at night.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Actually. Yeah, so in your sense, that would have been maybe a documentary for pond at night.
Yeah, one shot, a pond.
Yes. Oh, I fell asleep, I tell you, because we used to sleep on the roof. In Iran, you sleep on the roof, and then everyone's got a pool, and the pools get infested with frog at night, and that's the sound you get used to. So when I saw it at the, I think it was the V&A, everyone else was just looking at watching it, waiting for something to happen, and I was gone.
Nice. You know, it's actually a good compliment to a filmmaker, I think. I love nothing more than falling asleep in the cinema.
Really?
Yeah. Gosh, and it's it's no reflection on or critique on the film, usually. I mean, if it's a really bad movie, I'll want to run out. But if I fall asleep, then that's because I'm feeling so comfortable.
That's great. So is that something you go for with your films, is kind of
falling asleep,
reaching the person and relaxing them ultimately even towards sleep?
Into a dream state, yes. Yeah.
Where you then pop out of the screen and ask them the question.
No.
There's a lot of analysis in your films. There were some in your biog that you sent me. I loved a couple of the phrases like incubated desire, displacement and misplaced femininity. And I wondered if any of that had to do with your Austrian-Iranian...
Yeah, those are very big terms, aren't they?
I like those. Mm. Well, how were you brought up? Were you brought up as an Iranian or Austrian, 50-50?
Well, I'm still confused about that. I gravitate either way, depending on my mood. My mum's Austrian and my dad's Iranian, and I grew up in Austria mostly. We lived in Iran for 5 years before the revolution, so from when I was about 2 till the age of 7. And, you know, there's certainly some kind of Iranian elements to me, but I think I'm more Austrian than I am Iranian.
Don't tell your dad that.
He knows.
He knows.
He failed.
What about when you were growing up? I mean, did you feel like an Austrian?
No.
No. But why was that?
Well, I mean, one is colouring.
Yes.
I don't look particularly Austrian.
But then they are quite dark. I mean,
no.
Are they all blonde?
Not blonde, but they're not like, you know, well, they don't look like us.
Okay. And then the other, what else was there? Was it maybe the...
You know, the time I was growing up in Austria was late 70s and all the way through the 80s. And it was still quite isolated country in the sense that it didn't have many foreign people there, which has changed a lot in the last 10 years that I've visited back there. It's much more multicultural. You know, there was an element of me feeling like a foreigner there. Mm. And then, you know, there's some latent xenophobia also present in Austrian culture, which I, for that reason, sort of rejected them also because I felt rejected.
Naturally.
Naturally.
Yeah. And now when you go to tick the equal opportunities box?
Now I try to get as much money from the Austrian government to make my films as
possible.
I'm so Austrian now.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I just wondered then, so when you make your films, do you ever touch on anything that you feel is particularly Iranian? Or is that something you've not yet explored?
Hmm. Good question, no. I'm thinking of going to Tafresh and making a little video piece. It might be my first attempt at exploring my Iranian roots. I've been there before. It's beautiful, beautiful village.
Why particularly there?
Because my grandfather is from there. My father spent a lot of his childhood in the summer months just, you know, vacationing there. And recently a friend of mine told me that there is a saying that people from Tafresh are either geniuses or mad. So I thought I'll go and explore which group I belong to.
Well, it could mean that each and every one of them has this kind of edge within them. Not that they fall into two categories. It might be that each person seems so brilliant that they could be misconstrued as mad.
Or a genius. Yeah. It's worth finding out which category you belong to.
So on the basis of this saying, you're running over there?
Well, I'm not running just yet, but I'm thinking about it.
Good for you. I mean, you had films in so many places, Channel 4, BBC, and even CBC?
No.
What is CBC?
CBC? Oh, Canadian Broadcast Corporation.
All right. And you've shown, you know, here in New York, Glasgow, you know, plenty of places, The Tank, yeah. New York City, the Everson Museum of Art and so on. So are they all short films? That was something I wanted to know.
The majority of my output or my sort of like screening of my work has been Imago. I didn't really start putting my work out until a couple of years ago. So, you know, the notion of incubating is very personal to me.
You keep the work close?
No, I was just not ready, you know, to sort of show my work. So
I remember seeing your work actually at the Roxy, and you were there until the very moment that was going to be put on, and then it was put on and you were no longer there.
I know, and I jinxed the screening as well. I was supposed to go to a friend's birthday and I was running late, and I thought, okay, you know, I can see as much work as I can, but I don't need to see my own work, so I'll just leave. But I think I sort of created a bit of havoc at that moment because the projectionist, the lovely projectionist, Ronnie, who organised the evening, sort of started getting sidetracked by the fact that I was running out, and then she couldn't find the right, you know.
No, but the film worked. I mean, it was there. It was a play on, you know, the perception of size of the car.
Yeah,
it was great. Are you going to expand on that?
I don't know. The Black Saab is very personal to me, and I think I put it behind me with that 2-minute film.
Well, you've actually worked with Glass Shrimp, haven't you?
I did,
yeah. What were you doing with them?
I was just hanging out with them. They're friends of mine, and I started sort of trying to organise them a little. But, yeah, it was good fun.
Did you fail?
No. I think they well, you have to ask them, but I think they liked me having... you know, hanging out with them and trying to organise them. They were very good.
The film was good. I mean, you made them look like they were in New York City. You made London look so chic and so edgy.
But London is very chic and edgy.
Yeah, I know, but
New York just tries to be London.
Is that what you've noticed?
Yes.
So where do you prefer to live, like, of all the places that you've ever been? Where do you feel most at home?
Well, London is my home in a way. Yeah, my friends are here and my family's part of my family.
How was it living in New York then?
I didn't live in New York. I lived in Los Angeles.
Oh, right. Yeah. How was that?
It was harrowing, but really interesting. I had a lot of... my chair is creaking. It was really inspiring time for me. So, yeah.
Why was it harrowing, though? What is it? Is because it's so big and so overbearing?
It's just a very lonely place, you know, when you're used to interacting with people in a spontaneous way, just like in the street, and this may just be like eye contact, and you move to a city that has no spontaneous interaction whatsoever. You are in your house, you get into your car, and you go wherever, you get out, and you either meet a bunch of people that you've prearranged, or you have a task, which is whatever, shopping, you know, paying your vehicle tax or whatever it may be.
So is there a kind of fear of talking to someone ad hoc?
No, it's just that you just don't have spontaneous interaction whatsoever.
That would be quite an interesting place to go and just do it, wouldn't it, with a camera? Just go and bother them on
spontaneously interact with people.
They might combust.
Yeah. And then, what struck me first time I went there was that... It's a very loaded city. It's emotionally and psychologically loaded. The people who live there are loaded in every sense, you know. And
how did you notice that? I mean,
I just see it in people's faces.
Stressed.
You know, like gone as far west as possible, can't go west any further, and didn't accomplish whatever dreams they had, didn't fulfill their desires, and now they're just like walking. Emotional bombs.
Gosh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But you also
either on medication or just like getting on with it and saying, as my favorite Angelino Norman M. Klein says, "What the hell? Let's just live here." You know.
They sound slightly zombified.
The ones that aren't zombified just go, "Let's just live here." It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's interesting that you notice all these things about people. Is that something you've got a talent for, or have you ever studied anything like psychoanalysts?
No, not really. No, I've never formally studied. I did do psychology at school and did philosophy at school as well, but it's not, you know, it's not something that I know a great deal about.
No, but the terms from your biog would definitely be something that might be used in analysis of such sort, like misplaced femininity, incubated desire. Are they your terms? Are they?
Yeah, I mean, maybe other people would have a clearer understanding of how it relates to psychoanalysis, but I don't, because I haven't studied it. I just don't know.
I think as an Iranian woman, also misplaced femininity is an interesting point. You know, any woman from the East, especially, because there's a lot of emphasis on women being feminine there. They're not just allowed to be brought up. You know, of course there are tomboys and people that don't adhere to the norm, but the norm is more overbearing there for a woman than it is here. So I think when we grow up with that kind of context, even if it's in the background, it's still there. You know, our grandparents would have been adhering to some sort of norm. So when we come here, we don't have to adhere to any kind of femininity as such. Do you think that comes through in your films, perhaps? Is that where it comes from?
I'm not sure whether it's something particularly Iranian. I think it's more of a global condition. You know, men don't know how to be men and women don't know how to be women, and we're all a bit confused. And
do you think it's always been like that, or can you think of a time when...
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been around for that long. I don't know what it was like for my mum or my grandmother. I don't know. But I should think it's like an evolutionary process. I think, I mean, I can see it in the art world, certainly. I always felt that, okay, if, you know, he's sort of considered artworks on feminist terms, there was a revolution and women artists expressed that in the 70s and kind of more classical sense of, okay, it had a lot to do with flesh and blood and, you know, sexuality. And I've always felt maybe... for the past 10 or 15 years that there really ought to be a masculine revolution, because I felt that, that's what I felt. And I can see it now, you know, in different people's work, that they're exploring themselves. Men are exploring themselves now in a way that women did in the 70s, which is very sort of base, elementary kind of physicality, sexuality, emotions, you know, which are, you know, I
do,
think
do
good
on them.
Do you
see that in film at all when you're doing the rounds?
This film I saw, recently, you mean, or just generally?
Generally.
It's a beautiful Mexican film called Japón, which is kind of, yeah, you should.
It's an exploration of a man's masculinity.
Yeah, in all a way. Right. Yeah.
Okay, and you're also a lecturer. That was something I was going to say when we were talking about psychoanalysis. And what do you teach and where is it?
I teach documentary theory and practice at South Bank University. That's my day job.
It's your day job. How is it? Do your students inspire you? Do they challenge
some
you?
Some of them. Yeah.
That's good. So it keeps you fresh, really.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I really enjoy the theory class because I get to show films that I really like and we sit around and we talk about them and analyse them.
Yes. Well, if anyone's interested out there, they can come and join your course, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't do admissions.
No, an MA course in. Just quickly jump in. Well, so we'll look forward to Imago being shown at the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
That was Minu Nowruzi, filmmaker, Austrian-Iranian, Channel 4, BBC, CBC, many...
All sorts.
Many accolades to her. And we heard at the beginning of the show, Armin Ra, a cross-dressing theremin player from New York. We'll go out with one more of his tracks. Oh, if you want to catch a podcast of Six Pillars to Persia, please log on to http://sixpillarstopersia.wordpress.com.
And I have found both freedom and safety in my madness. The freedom of loneliness and the safety from being understood. For those who understand us, enslaved.
But there's no way I'm going home.